Blog Talk Radio.
You have just tuned in to an episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir, Sherry Pang, and Maria Wilson Duff. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, a world of ghosts, UFOs, and generally anything unexplained. The show is about to begin. Entering the world of the paranormal. I'm Jason Ophir, here with Maria Wilson Duff, your co-host, and we're going to explore the world of the paranormal this evening. Hey, Maria, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. The sun was shining all day today. The temperatures were warm. I'm totally exhausted, picking up my yard from this horrible rainy winter that we've had. It's been awful.
Yeah. Well, it's been nice out here in Oregon. I didn't really see much of it. I went out and had brunch with a friend, but that's about it. I'm usually off on Sundays, so I've been enjoying my time off. It's been really stressful. And here's a flu update for the people out there. The flu is out of control. At least it is in Oregon. More specifically, at least it's, you know, the Portland area. I'm seeing a ton of flu because I'm the flu man. I deal with the flu. I test the flu at the local hospital. And it's out of control. It's kind of interesting to see when you have this intimate perspective of what's happening. You know, a couple months ago, to get a positive flu would be rare, but now you're starting to see it. The positives are more, you know, we're having a lot more positives than we are negatives, and there's a lot of sick people. And I was walking around the hospital. I had to find the security office the other day, and I had to walk through the waiting room. Literally everybody in the waiting room was wearing a mask. The employees are wearing masks. It's like China or Japan, where you see everybody wearing masks, like some massive pandemic going around, like end of the world stuff. Cats and dogs living together, mass pandemonium.
Well, at least not everybody's wearing the biohazard full face gear and the all onesie pajama thing that they wear to make sure that they don't catch any disease that's going to kill them. It could be worse, Jason. It could be worse.
It could be worse. There could be some new strain of Ebola, and then maybe we'll see everybody wearing those respirators. And
you crack me up.
Well, you know,
I'm end of the world.
Oh, yeah, totally. I embrace it with open arms. I'm telling you, one of these days, there's going to be some government-created pandemic or some nanovirus that's going to go around and depopulate the majority of the population, and the only people that will survive are the rich and powerful because they're the only ones that are able to get the vaccine. It's going to happen. I'm predicting it. But then again, I'm also predicting an alien invasion. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
That's kind of already happened a couple of times, but the only reason the flu's so bad in Portland is because that's where you are, and they're out to get you.
Yes, it's a conspiracy between
the Illuminati. About, won't it?
Yeah, the Illuminati has seeded Portland, Oregon, with influenza A just to get to me. That's true.
That's correct.
And after the show, I'm going to go check myself back into the psychiatric hospital.
Well,
I'm on release just to do the show.
Please feed your cats before you do that, okay?
Oh, yes. Yeah, be sure to do that. So, we have a wonderful guest tonight, Janine Duffy, psychic medium, and it looks like she's on hold. So, without any further ado, I want to bring her on.
Wonderful.
Hey, guys.
Hey,
how's it going?
Going good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I was listening to you talking about your flu overwhelmment at the hospitals. So I think a lot of that is that people are afraid to get the vaccination coming right from the horse's mouth. You know, they fear that there's still that chemical in the vaccine that causes autism. And it's been proven time and time again over the last 30 years that that chemical was eliminated from the vaccine. So I wish folks would get their vaccinations. So just saying, especially in the Portland area.
I should. I declined my vaccination, which basically means if I'm around patients, which I am somewhat often, I have to wear a mask. But I'm the one that runs the flu tests for the most part, so I'm handling this stuff all day long. And I know it's a ticking time bomb, and I'm not paranoid. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I had to get lots of vaccinations to work in a hospital. Hepatitis B. I had to get chicken pox because I've never had chicken pox. I don't know. I don't know why I'm being so stubborn about it. I think the main reason is I've never had the flu, and if I've made it 45 years without having the flu, I'm probably pretty good. But then again, I haven't been working with flu literally every day either. So.
So the pneumonococcal. I'm not an epidemiologist, but I know enough to know that at least one of the vaccines that is out there is effective against one of these virus subtypes, the bacterial subtype, whatever that virus subtype bacterial thing that hasn't mutated yet is. So I think that if we do, in fact, you know, vaccinate against the one that's been proven now, that that's safe. But if we start throwing vaccines at our general populace that haven't been tested, you know, out for the 30-year mark, then I would say, you know, maybe not. I'm just saying that, you know, things can mutate, and that's not a good thing. So,
isn't that a problem with the flu vaccines? Is they get a vaccine against the flu strand that maybe happened last year, and once you get it, then the flu that's running around isn't covered by this vaccine?
I think that viruses want to live. I mean, they're like we already have our alien invasion on our planet. You know, if you look at microbiology, that those little guys look like, you know, aliens from another world when you get them under the microscope. And in effect, it's like they mutate, they want to survive, they want to live. So, you know, and it's like you have this big dumb animal walking around, you know, with all these other, you know, what do you call those genotype elements within our beings that, you know, what is it, only 60% of our body is actually human, and the other 40% of it's a bunch of bacteria. I'm just trying to say that if, in fact, you know, you get infected with a new virus, especially with all the, you know, different changes in our environment, people digging up holes where they shouldn't be digging up holes, taking down forests where they shouldn't be taking down forests, you know, you're getting a lot of stuff that's been buried for, you know, tens of thousands of years, you know, into our into the troposphere, into, you know, the very air that we breathe. So, you know, we don't know what's going to happen next with, you know, just anything to do with a flu virus that's coming around. You've got, you know, air travel, people going into different countries, you know, going around places that have been, you know, deforested, and then, you know, picking up some kind of a new thing, and then they bring it, you know, bring it on over, you know, to where, you know, any population is, and then that transmits whatever new virus that's going to be out there. And it could be a flu, it can be a, you know, virus X, you know, and we don't know what's going to happen next. And it's kind of it's not a ticking time bomb. It is a time bomb that's been, you know, unleashed and opened up, and it's scary. It's scary out there. But I do want to say that that one vaccination from the research that I've currently read is, you know, it's a viable thing. So it's, to me, I don't know what people are supposed to do about, you know, healing when, you know, they become reliant on, you know, listening to, you know, what you have to do, like get your flu shot now, that kind of a thing. So I hope that that kind of answered where you were going.
It did. You were talking about we're digging holes in places that we shouldn't dig holes in.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Because, you know, cave explorations and things like that take people
mining.
To places. Yes.
Yeah, especially mining. You know, when you go and you take, you know, you look at the statistics on copper mining or gold mining or diamond mining or, you know, mining for, you know, whatever precious metal, precious stone. And it's like that is just, you know, the earth is this big ball that's spinning and, you know, you take away ballast points from it to balance itself, you know, and of course it's going to, you know, go off kilter. And it literally has gone off kilter. If you look at, you know, now magnetic north is moving rapidly, you know, away from where it's been. And, you know, it's always moved. Our planet's always had that movement. But, you know, mankind's greed is, you know, accelerated a lot of, you know, some of the things that have been happening on our planet. And if people could just slow down a little bit and say, hey, you know, we can reuse this or we can recycle this or we don't need the newest thing and let's, you know, keep what we have and, you know, try to protect what we have. So.
And the sad part is, I know I was listening to a radio show on the way home from work, and they were talking about the most polluted places on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the USA was nowhere in this survey. It was places like Indonesia, Iraq,
mm-hmm.
Pakistan, India. India was huge. China was right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, America, that we do our part on pollution mm-hmm. and things like that. Unfortunately, we can't make these other communist countries follow our lead.
Yeah,
I wish there
and
was a solution to it.
You know, they've got their own, you know, battle of trying to keep their industrialization up with the times. So a lot of the pollutants that happen, you know, go right straight into the water systems. And then, therefore, those water systems, you know, all end up in the ocean. And then that ecosystem gets destroyed by, you know, the industrialized nations that don't have the money to, you know, keep up with the public health, you know, issues. Like, what was it, that, where they were going to do the Olympics the one year, where, what is it, South America, Sano, I can't even remember what it was, but their beaches were like just filled with, you know, medical waste and just all kinds of just sewage and garbage and trash. And, you know, we of the United States, you look at, you know, when we get hit by a hurricane, you know, the devastation happens, but then, you know, people come in through, you know, different agencies to help, you know, restore, you know, that area. But when it comes right down to it, you've got, you know, I remember when I traveled into Spain one year, there was like extreme poverty on one side of the coin. And then on the other side of the coin, it was the super rich. So you look at that and you wonder, you know, how long, you know, have these other countries been living, you know, on this like double-sided coin that they have, you know, where the poorest populations, you know, live in a certain way. Now, in the United States, we have the homeless crisis that's going on. So you're looking at, you know, in that in its own right, you know, has become like this social symptom for our nation to look at, you know, how our families are like, just the whole heart of the family has gone out in the United States in a lot of the sense that we want to believe that we're doing the right thing. But when I drive out on Powell Boulevard and I'm going downtown into Portland, Oregon, when I see tent cities, you know, springing up like, you know, like the streets, even in Los Angeles, where I have some friends that live around where Century Boulevard is, there's like a whole city, a tent city of homeless people. And from my heart, it's like you base it from the nucleus of the family. So that's falling in the United States. I think everybody's become secular and it becomes confusing for people who have values to hold it together, you know, and there's a lot of other types of doctrine that become confusing for people. And it's getting to be a kind of a mess even here when you think about it.
Absolutely. I see a lot of those tents too going to work, and you know, apparently the rich just want to stay rich, and it's more important to invade countries than it is to take care of your own and improve the infrastructure. Just my two cents.
It seems it's ridiculous. I know that, you know, working with Multnomah County, that the branch that takes care of that population. When I say that population, I don't mean to be, you know, saying the word that population. I mean to say that, you know, that is a crisis. But I'm saying that the funding that goes, you know, which was crazy, and I don't want to blast administrations, but I may as well say that education got cut. Public health got cut, emergency management with fire suppression got cut. So this is during this presidential administration that runs, you know, our state government. Our funding for our state got cut, and we're seeing the impact of it, you know, over the last, you know, what, almost 2 years now since that person has been in office, and, you know, his administration has done what it has done, you know, with the environment, with our public health systems, and with our, you know, with our infrastructure. And it's pathetic. It's sad, you know, to know that it's kind of like every man for himself, and what happened to, you know, pushing forward to have the, you know, continuity of a family. And, you know, you could go over to your cousin's house and, you know, stay there for the weekend because you and your wife got into a fight, or you lost your job and you need to get a new job or something like that. But it's like when you were saying that the United States is doing its part, and it's kind of dropping the ball. Really, when you take a look at the Willamette River in Oregon State, or even the Columbia River, you're looking at the 13th, I think it's the 10th, it's kind of gone up on the scale, most polluted river in the nation, okay? So you look at that and you wonder, you know, hey, let's go fishing. I don't want to eat the fish that I catch, that's for sure. But, you know, what can we do to, you know, change it? I guess we hide and watch as the, you know, government does what it does. We formed the Regional Management Technical Emergency Committee, you know, for our region. We've bound together Clackamas County, Multnomah County, Washington County, Cowlitz County, East County, Multnomah. So we have become a region as a response to what's happened, you know, in our nation. And, you know, we still are experiencing crisis because of, you know, the funding cuts that have occurred. So It's pretty sad when everything has to deal with money.
It is. I do know that a lot of the times when money is budgeted for, I know, school lunches, and I can remember this during a previous presidential year. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there. Trying to think how to word this. When the money's not used in the budget, they remove some of that money, because if they budgeted too much and it's not all being used, then they rework the budget. So it kind of makes me wonder if they don't really realize, if the state is not reporting to the federal government exactly the correct amount of money being used.
No, they do report monies, you know, to get more money. It's like there's funding allocations that occur every fiscal quarter for different agencies to help different populations in different areas, like, you know, say for the Board of Education. And what ends up happening is that, you know, the guys up in the White House, when it comes down to pipe that, you know, $2 million, they'll say, well, no, it's not necessary. We're going to cut that funding. That program isn't necessary. So a lot of people will end up suffering because some idiot in the White House decides that that program isn't a viable program. Just like in fire suppression, when we watched everything burn last year. Now, when we burn everything, I know that, you know, the trees are coniferous, and if I'm saying that word wrong, just please strike it from the record. It's kind of like one of those trees burn, the cone explodes, the seed then, you know, will germinate or plant out onto the earth, and you know, that's great, and the trees are supposed to burn, but they weren't supposed to burn and then just keep burning. And there are forest fires that are still burning, like, to this day, that we don't hear about it in the news because it isn't, you know, affecting a community. But some of the fires that were plaguing California, plaguing Eastern and the central parts of Oregon, British Columbia, and Washington State, the majority of those fires are not contained even now, okay? It's just they're like at a certain level where they're still burning. I mean, it's like, it's craziness, because, you know, if somebody in the White House says, okay, well, we're going to cut, you know, $200,000, you know, out of that funding pool, and we're going to cut another, you know, $480,000 out of that funding pool, and we're going to, so like they cut like over $1 million out of, you know, wildland fire suppression protections. And, you know, people are saying, well, you know, you don't like Donald Trump. And I'm like saying, no, I don't, because he doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't have enough, you know, common knowledge to say, hey, you know, this is a region that needs this type of money for these types of programs, rather than say, oh, who's going to need, like when he wants to build his stupid wall, he's taking money from the Defense Department's housing bill funding, and, you know, saying, oh, they don't need that money. You know, it's like saying, well, you know, because you work with the military and your family, you know, protects our nation, so therefore you don't, you know, you're not going to get housing funding, you know, from the U.S. government. So, like, environmental protections and education, you know, so those funding that have been cut are just like, it's ridiculous. I don't understand it. I don't understand why, you know, the super rich get to control, you know, everything, because it doesn't make any sense to me why they would do such a thing to families, to people trying to make, you know, this earth sustainable so that we can have the continuity of our planet be, you know, part of whatever it's supposed to be in the next, you know, millennium or however many years it's supposed to happen.
It's like everything's just going downhill. What can you do?
I don't know at this point. There's not a lot of, so like my gardener came over to my place where we live, and I had some lodgepole pines that had naturally decided to germinate in the front garden part, and she ended up pulling them out. I'm like, you got to be kidding me, you know. So that wasn't a good thing.
Well, I did want to add, now I guess we should probably, I guess we're kind of skipping around, but so we did put a bio and was hoping you could kind of let the listeners know. I've kind of gone off on a tangent, but a good one, because this is information that everybody needs to hear, what's going on out there. But I was hoping you can give kind of a bio about yourself.
You want me to talk about myself? You'd like to hear about me.
Yeah.
We would love to hear about you.
I was born. I grew up. So basically, I am from this region. I'm from the Pacific Northwest. I grew up in the foothills of the Cascade Mountains. And I grew up in a humble little home with my mother and father and my brother. And at about 5.5 years old, I would walk kind of like trance-like our home. And it could be in the dead of winter at 23 degrees below zero or whatever. And I would walk. I was aware that I was walking. I just walked out of the house. It was like something was calling to me. And I would go down into my field where there were western red cedars and like a big rift in the geological formation of our planet, and where a waterfall was, and it was like a big round scooped place. Like a giant beach ball had landed on top of it and made a big squishy imprint on the earth. Anyway, I would go down into this place, and I would meet with, people could say it's a child's imagination, but it was my reality for my entire growing up, these alien people. And they're about as high as a 3-year-old child at a normal development, and just naturally amazing, friendly, silvery blue skinned folk. And it was just part of my growing up, part of my childhood. So after playing with the blues, growing up with these guys, I was able to do a lot of fun things. Like in first grade, there was a play. So I sat in the audience with a bunch of other children, and I would think about my favorite number, and I thought, this magician, this guy is pretty boring. And I thought at him. I thought the number 333. That was the time I was born, in the morning of on April 19th, which is a cusp of Aries and Taurus, I guess, in the constellations of the world. Anyway, so I was thought at this magician, and I pushed my number out, my 333, and the guy, in the middle of his act, said my number. And he kind of looked around, and he was a bit confused, and I was tickled pink because I thought number and transferred it and telepathically, there I spat it out, created that instance in that person's consciousness where he was he was like an oracle. He orated for me. And I was a little kid, right? Quite young. So the second, third time it happened with, you know, wolves and elk and deer and rabbits and squirrels and chipmunks. I mean, any animal, any wild animal would come up to me. I could touch it like a bird, like a, just like I was kind of this creepy little kid, not creepy little kid, but I liked animals. So animals like me, children like me, like babies will come up to me now and sit on my lap and their parents will be like, who are you? You know, and why is my child sitting on your lap? So that in itself is crazy. So the most about this telepathic ability of mine, my friend Sandra Miller had come to the house, and another friend named Harvett Center came to my house. And I was thinking, I was 11 years old, and my head was spinning. And in the background, I could hear, "Neen, stop," and that's all I heard. And my, I looked up, and my girlfriend was spinning like a blender on puree speed. And I was like, holy, I snapped my concentration off. I didn't mean to hurt her. And it was like she flew against the wall, like somebody threw her against the wall. And I was like, my friends were scared of me. They were like, my God, what did you do? Who are you? That kind of a thing. And I was scared, and it was terrifying to me. I didn't want to have any kind of thing like that. I just wanted to, you know, do funny little telepathic mind, you know, games with people and say, you know, maybe that person's going to say they have got George Washington's wooden teeth when they walk in, you know, through the door or something like that. So when that happened, I totally just kind of isolated into myself. I didn't talk to anyone for a very long time. And then I started having the dreams. But the dreams started happening about, you know, being taken, you know, feet first up and through into a kind of a jello like substrate, and, you know, being like just observed and then being returned. So that kept happening. The blues ended up leaving. I went to find them and they were not there anymore. And it was like everything was kind of like just weird for a period of time. I remember looking out a window, and it was like a scene out of a horror movie. You know, here's a flock of geese coming, and it was like someone took, you know, a machete and chopped it in half, and one of the animals ended up, you know, throwing itself into the window that I was, you know, observing this flock out of. And I'm like, you know, where do I go to? So I wasn't a religious person. I wasn't raised that way. And so I decided to try to go to a church to, you know, to ask, you know, someone what was going on with me and why I was having these visions and what was happening. So I went to a four square, you know, church and walked all the way around the whole building, and the whole thing was closed, even though their church bell was ringing. So then I was very disenchanted. So I walked out onto the street. And, you know, the animals would come up to me, like these little squirrels. And, you know, and I lived in Kelso. I kind of grew up around in there, like I said, to the foothills of the Cascades. And anyway, so this squirrel came down out of a tree, and like red-tailed hawk, you know, came. And, you know, all these animals are, you know, coming at me. And I'm like, get away from me. You know, I felt like the dead zone. I didn't know what was happening. And then it was like I could feel everybody, you know, everybody's everything around me, and I couldn't understand it. You know, why could I hear what that person was thinking? You know, why did I know what that person was thinking? I mean, and it was just like everything coming at me at once. And then I said, to hell with it, and I moved all the way over to the East Coast. And that's when I started seeing these, you know, really tall, the Nordic ETs. Nordic ETs are kind of freaky looking. They're super tall. So from one race to the next. Okay.
So we have the blues, and then we've got these Nordic guys, and they look like angels. I don't know if, you know, some people understanding what an angel looks like. So in Nordic, and they're like gold-eyed. They're 7 feet plus in height, and they have an ability to like transcend matter. So like if you're standing on one side of a fence and they're on the other side of the fence, they can reach through that fence. That happened. I was out in the back garden of the new place that I lived on the East Coast, and I was raking in the back garden leaves, and the rake fell apart, and I stood there rather perplexed, holding this handle of this rake and this rake head. And the first time I saw one of these guys was to the fence, and I'm like, whoa, this is crazy. And the first thing, and he spoke, and it was a male. He spoke, and he said, can I fix that for you? And I handed the handle, and he took it through the fence. Like, I didn't hand it over the fence. It went through the fence, and the rake went through the fence. And he fixed the rake, and when I went to say thank you, as I'm standing there stunned, he wasn't there anymore. So another time I saw one of the Nordics was when I was running out of gas, coasting down a mountain near Reno. And the gas station, of course, opened at about 3:33 a.m. And here's one of these Nordic guys, and they pumped gas in the car. They weren't there, but I had a full tank of gas, so that's kind of crazy. And another one helped guide me to show where a person was lying in a pool of blood, dying. So I was able to help that person thanks to being able to see, you know, what I do see. And so all throughout my life, I've had experiences of just amazing, transcending, beautiful, wise, incredibly protected beings being part of me. So the other thing that kept popping up in my life is the number 333. And I don't read for a reason. I don't try to know anything other than, lo and behold, this year I want to study chemistry. So I had no idea that everybody was going to say, okay, this is the year of the periodic table, you know. So fate has it as such that, you know, young Janine is going to go off and study, you know, the periodic table. But lo and behold, there's a new periodic table talking about the depletion of the elements. And, you know, that didn't really surprise me. And then, so the other thing I attract are crows, red-tailed hawks. I do ghost, what is it? If somebody wants to know where they're, you know, what happened to their grandfather or what happened to their grandmother or where their lost keys are, you know, stuff like that. So I've had an incredibly amazing experience so far. So I just would want to share what I can and the knowledge that's imparted upon me to anyone who would want to speak with me on whatever level that they need to know. So I'm rather an open book about stuff. So that's pretty much where I'm at.
I think you broke Jason's heart when you talked about the Nordics not being pretty people.
Did I say they weren't pretty?
Well, it's something about they were like 7 feet tall and things like that, and I think that would intimidate Jason just a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like gold-eyed and white-haired. Gold eyes with white hair. I mean, gold eyes. And then able to transcend matter.
Is the gold eyes, is it just the color part of the iris of the eyes that's like a shiny gold, or is it like the whole eyeball thing?
It's the whole of the eyeball thing.
Okay.
It's like
I'm just wondering, it's
a different kind of an eyeball thing too.
I had a dream one time many years ago, and it was kind of powerful and striking. I'm sure it was just a dream, but it was this female, beautiful, blonde alien. It looked human, except the colored part of her eyes was like shiny gold, and she had on like this blue jumpsuit uniform. I don't know. It was just weird. When you said that, that just reminded me of this dream I had a while ago.
Well, I know
Jason's
that someone
been visited, and he doesn't realize it.
Yeah, the one
I don't
that
want to be
What? You don't want to be what?
Visited. Go away,
he doesn't
alien.
Want to be visited.
He doesn't want to be visited?
He has been. Jason has had several experiences, but he tries to block them out of his brain.
I'm in denial.
And it's just not working. He is.
You're in denial.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't be in denial.
I'm
Where
sorry, so what were you saying about the eyes?
Well, I was saying that you were, so the white part of the eye is white and the middle part of the eye is gold. Like it's like almost like a, I can't even explain the gold part of it. I mean, it looks like a normal eye. And then the other has like the whole of the eye is like almost light coming out, you know, so it's kind of like a shell of the being that you choose in your consciousness that you want to create. But what that being is it's pure energy. And, you know, whatever that you think you want to believe, then that's what you'll believe. That's an easy way to put
Jason?
It.
Yeah.
Jason, you need to be listening. These are answers to your questions that you have.
I don't know. Hopefully it was a dream. I mean, it wasn't unpleasant. It was just a striking enough dream that I've remembered it for the last 15 years. So this being was, you know, like I said, the colored part of the eye was metallic gold. It was really shiny. And she was like perfect looking, but short, a blue jumpsuit. And I think there was a symbol on the left side of the jumpsuit. I think it was a triangle and a circle, and then on the shoulders, uh-huh. like how we have officer bars, there were three silver bars, like captain bar kind of things. And why do I remember that 15 years later? Who knows?
Well, it's because obviously it made a significant impact on you.
I guess.
I mean, I guess my question would be like, did you, were you aware of your being like above your body, your physical body during that time or not?
No, I was standing in front of her and I don't really remember much else or any kind of communicating, but I don't remember what was being said. But I've had lots of like weird alien dreams and stuff like that. That one just, there was some power behind it. It just had some emotional connection kind of thing going on.
Uh-huh.
But I'm also skeptical even with my own experiences, you know, I'm constantly questioning everything. So, yeah.
Yeah. People have asked me time and time again to take them to this area, you know, where that perfectly round place is. And, you know, now that the blues have, you know, that they're long gone from that area, you know, of course, I would love to take people there and to show them, you know, this anomaly, you know, this perfectly round, real, just a crater, like a round crater, but not a crater, you know, and then the rift, like something really heavy landed there and the earth kind of broke, do you know what I mean, like cracked. So if that was the case and that was the fact, you know, then please, by all means, someone, you know, go and see, you know, what was there and test it, you know, for whatever they have to test it for, you know, and prove that it's real. For the Nordics, that the guy that helped me fix my rake, you know, I will never forget that. I'm just in this ice raking and the rake falls apart. Here's Mr. I'm too tall, my hair is too white, my eyes are gold guy, you know, coming to the fence. And when he took that, when he took it from me, it was through the fence, you know? So I'm thinking to myself, why me? Why do I have to be the chosen one? And that's the other trip. So James Gillian of the East Eddy Ranch up near Mount Adam in, or is it Mount Adams? It's Mount Adams. My husband is Clyde Lewis, and he does a national talk show called Ground Zero Media. GroundZeroMedia.org is the website, whatever. Blah, blah, blah. So they went up to East Eddy to, they do it every year to make East Eddy spaghetti, which is kind of, you know, lame, I guess. I don't know, because I'm not a big pasta eater. Well, East Eddy spaghetti is kind of, I don't know what they do. I think they put everything in the pot. So, which I don't think really sounds that appetizing, you know, to think about it. Kind of everything spaghetti. So, blah, 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 and I keep saying the same thing. So I drive up. I just had, you know, my breast cancer surgery, breast removal, whatever, and it was about in October that we went to the ranch. I can't exact that last year. So, but James Gillian called out to me specifically. And I was like, when I met him, I said to him the following. I said, I'm late for the meeting. I'm sorry. And I knew that I had some presence because I, like I said, I don't try to watch television. I don't try to read books. I don't want to know, you know, what's going on. I just kind of want to stay away from it because of that experience I had with Harvett Center and Sandra Miller in my own home. And it, that telekinetic, telepathic, you know, transference of my energy to make my friends spin, that was crazy enough in my lifetime to make me, you know, completely withdraw from, you know, the psychic ability that I have. And so I drove up to East Eddy. James Gillian knew me. I knew him. We just knew each other, and I didn't look at a picture. I try not to know these people, but we knew each other. We were like kindred, and it was like we're from the same council, you know, we're kindred from the same council, and like on the council there are nine, I'm the last one, you know, on this high council. And James affirmed this information that I already had in my own head. So when you have these dreams about, you know, circles with, you know, triangles or, you know, badges or numbers or any type of information that you have, any of these things are valuable because you're looking inward to your true self, and your true self is connected, you know, to a higher self. So your higher self is of, you know, of a consciousness that exists, you know, beyond what we've manifest and chosen to manifest. So I've chosen to manifest in this form so that I can talk and that I can use my significant other, Clyde Lewis, as my voice. And he speaks for me on his national radio program because some of the things that I say may not be flavored to the, you know, to the conversations that people can understand. So I'm saying that astral projection, you know, people can do that. I'm saying that, you know, if you want to have, you know, your dream house, you can build it. You can do anything that you want to manifest, okay? And I think that people need that hope to believe that, you know, what they see or what they feel is, it's real. It's not something that you can, like, equate to, you know, like indigestion or like a hangover or a, you know, a bad dream. You know, there are, you know, actual other beings. You know, I am living proof that I have been, you know, affected by, you know, great knowledge and wisdom. I didn't know who St. Francis of Assisi was. I had no idea. And so I'm in Longview, Washington. I'm in my own apartment. I'm sleeping. I'm having a nice dream. At least I think I was having a nice dream. I was floating up above, you know, the earth, you know, in its pristine form. I was hanging out with, who was it, Whoopi Goldberg and Robin Williams in my dream. And we were just floating above the earth, and then it happened. So, like, these three black triangular-looking ships tore through the fabric of the universe and scared the living daylights out of me, and I came in fast through my core, and the wall exploded in the room that I was sleeping in from the force that, you know, my energy came back into this being. And so the wall caught on fire, and I got up out of bed as the wall was burning, and I padded down the hall, knocked on the manager's door. It was at this building that was reclaimed for the, what is it, the Society for the Protection of the Arts or something like that. And knocked on the manager's door, and she came out, and I told her that my wall was on fire, and she was kind of freaky about it and called the fire department, ran down with a fire extinguisher and put out the fire. And I was kind of smirking to myself, but I was also super freaked out because of these entities that had now been present. But, you know, that was, you know, 25 years ago. And then we had recently, we had that, you know, the tetrad of the moon, and then another rift opened, you know, of pestilence and crap. So you look at that's happened to our humanity over the last, you know, I'm going to say 5 years now, and it just becomes commonplace for you know, you're watching TV and you see, like, there's a situation where you just don't want to watch the news, you know, and it becomes almost commonplace to see that kind of stuff where we become numb to it. But that's, I don't want to become numb to, you know, the transgressions that have fallen upon, you know, mankind. And that's, you know, part of, you know, we've got to take a complete different look about how we are and treat every person with kindness and respect, and, you know, believe the stories that, you know, the children or the people share with us, that these are real things and that people are needed, you know, to share wisdom with others. And there's a lot of stuff that we can do. Did my phone? Hello.
We're listening.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people can't get past the five senses that they have, so they can't understand go through. And when you start at a young age as yourself and you have to go through these things, you don't have a support system.
Mm-hmm.
People don't listen to children, and especially, I mean, children will tell you what's actually going on, but once you tell them, oh no, that didn't happen,
yeah,
then you withdraw, and look, just like you did, you withdraw from the rest of the world. And the negativity that is spread throughout the world with the news and everything else, yes, the withdrawal from all of that, because that will affect someone like you. You have to pull into yourself to stay positive,
yes,
and to spread the light and the love to the rest of the people.
Yeah, the St. Francis of Assisi thing that I was going to talk about. So I was, you know, sleeping, had a prophetic dream. I was walking through streets of Babylon. I saw all these golden pillars with ancient like Phoenician, is that that word, writing on them, you know, different like hieroglyphs, you know, just through, you know, these great halls of like ancient wisdom. And then I walked upon a like a place of like where there were catacombs different graves where they were encrusted with like rubies and diamonds and emeralds and sapphires, and my mind's eye caught, you know, this beautiful sapphire that was, you know, the size of, you know, a basketball practically. And I put my hands upon it, not to, you know, take it in any manner, but just to admire its beauty. And when I put my hands on it, my body, it's like it absorbed into me in my dream this knowledge of from this blue sapphire. And then all at once I knew St. Francis of Assisi. I had no idea who St. freaking Francis of Assisi was, right? And so then after that, in this dream, I walk out onto a procession, and on one side there was like a black army, and on the other side there was a white army, but in between them there was all this static, like on a television that's gone bad. And then I started singing in a multitude of voices. Okay, so I translated, you know, some, and the neighbors heard me. I was so loud, I guess. I was like a beacon, a trumpet, a you know, a conduit. But I announced an arrival of something, and I don't even know what was going on with me. And it was like, the only way that I could put it is that I sang out in a multitude of voices that was over, you know, 80 decibels, you know. I don't even know how many 80 decibels are, but it was pretty damn loud. And so then after I woke up from that dream, then I studying who St. Francis of Assisi was, because the name came to me in the dream. And as I said, I wasn't religious. I stay far away from it. And I basically had isolated since, you know, that incident had occurred. But then I found out that I could make money off of reading tarot cards, or, you know, doing psychic readings, or if somebody asked me to look at someone, you know, who this person is or what they do, where they're from, you know, I could say everything about someone, like, you know, that person just went to Machu Picchu, they're a podiatrist, they have two kids, they've been married three times, you know, stuff like that, you know, by just looking at someone, you know, tell everything about them and not even know that person. Or, but if somebody asked me to look at someone, Sherry had talked to me and she said, well, Janine, you can't do it without that person's permission. So then is that wrong? You know, I don't know what the rules are. So I guess.
Jason, I'm sending her a picture of you. We're going to get your life story.
That's scary.
Yeah, I want to hear it. Yes, it is.
We can reveal it on the show now.
Oh, that would
be
great.
We're running out of time, guys.
Yeah, I know. We're running out of time. Well, Janine, how can people get a hold of you? Is there a way they can contact you if somebody wants to get a hold of me?
Oh, if somebody wants a reading from me, they can email me at Janine, it's J-A-N-I-N-E, and then dot Duffy, D-U-F-F-Y, at AOL.com. I'm that old. I got my name with a dot in it.
AOL.
Yeah, AOL.com. Janine.Duffy at AOL.com. So, and they can
Wonderful.
Put in the subject line, you know, help. And I can try to guide them and help them out, I guess. Well, that's
wonderful.
For sure.
Well, very good. Well, Janine, thank you so much for taking the time this evening to tell us about your experiences and share your knowledge with that. We'd really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. You guys take care.
You too.
Good night. You too.
Bye now.
Bye. All righty.
Wow. That was
intense.
That's
a lot
of
experiences. Yeah.
Yes.
I couldn't
definitely.
I couldn't imagine, like, being out of body and getting shot back in and the wall bursting into flames. I've said it a million times before. I kind of enjoy living, you know, being ignorant about what happens beyond our five senses. It just seems kind of scary.
It really is, because it's out of our norm, and it's a change that we don't want to accept, and it's hard for our minds to wrap around it. But you've had these experiences, and you know what's really going on, and ignoring it is not going to help your psyche any. You need to embrace it, Jason.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've had a lot of weird things happen, probably more than most. Not, you know,
yes.
I'm sure people have had a lot stranger stuff, but what scares me is, you know, if that stuff is real, because I'm skeptical, say it's real and everything's real and all these experiences are real. What scares me about that is if you know, opening up to that, you know, what sort of craziness can result from that, you know. It just doesn't sound like a good time. It doesn't sound like a winning combination. I mean, it would be cool to have some psychic ability. I don't think I'm particularly psychic, although I haven't had any, you know, been able to do anything like Janine or anything. But I've had some weird circumstances where it appeared I had a brief fleck of psychicness. But I don't really want to sit and train myself, because who knows what sort of doors you will open.
Well, this is true, and you might see people for who they are and what they are, and I know you like your little world, and you want it to stay the same, so you might not want to do that.
I don't like change. And, you know, I
spent
18 years as, like, a retail investigator. Now I work in the area of science. So when I was younger, I was more open to all this stuff, and I would mess around with it, but as I got older and I started having these real analytical jobs, like being an investigator and then working, you know, laboratory and, you know, dealing with all the craziness of science and physiology, I found myself even more blocked off to it, even more skeptical, because now my mindset is science and logic based, you know, which we need those people too. I know, it's terrible.
We do. And you can use that, but you have been, all your jobs have worked with a lot of negativity, especially when you were an investigator.
You've got
to see the worst of people.
Oh, God. I busted some guy one time. This was years ago for shoplifting. And shortly thereafter, he murdered his wife.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's awful.
I stopped somebody. He jumped in a car, and then they tried to get away, ran over an employee. I've chased countless people. I've been chased. I've, you know, been rolling on the ground with people, and, you know, I've learned how to interview and interrogate people and to break their mind, basically. Really, really fascinating if you learn how to read these subconscious body language kind of things, and you really learn how to get people they decided they're not going to admit to. It's really kind of interesting how people crack.
Sir, are you trying to tell me in your past life you were a CIA agent that worked with the MK Ultra project that went on?
It wouldn't surprise me. I do kind of believe
like
in past lives.
Okay, so we need to schedule a whole show on just what you were just talking about.
You know, that would be
kind
of fun.
We need to do that.
We need to hear
all about Jason.
Yeah, I got stories. I mean, I was a private investigator doing surveillance. All I did was surveillance all over the country. I'd get home, I'd check my email to see where I was going the next day, and it would be like, okay, you're going to New York, you're going to Chicago, you know.
Wow.
Watching people, and just people are just so shady. You know, people on workman's compensation for 20 years, you're sitting outside their house and you're following them around, and, you know, they're like playing tennis and they're supposedly supposed to be in a wheelchair. I mean, it's so
ridiculous. Wow. So, yes, when you're scheduling a show, we're going to hear all about your investigations.
Yeah.
We're going to
so
do
that's
this
why
in
become,
April.
Okay, I'll talk about it.
Yeah, Jason Palooza,
you know,
2019.
Yeah.
That was a text message I just got from a listener.
Yeah, you know, I've always thought that I should write a book because my life is really bizarre. It truly, truly is. And it's so very entertaining. You know, I tried when I was younger, I wanted to be a police officer. You know, I was working in retail loss prevention, this and that. And I tried to be a reserve officer, but I couldn't run fast enough. I think I was like a minute late on the run. And then so my life just went, you know, I bought a Harley Davidson, then I joined a motorcycle club. I was in the club for 12 years, and then it just craziness. It's interesting how life, you know, the circumstances of life and the events that happen and the changes, you know. I never would have thought I'd work in a laboratory, but the only reason I work in a laboratory is because, I broke my ankle. It's just fascinating how things, not just my life, but anybody's life can just be headed one direction, and when you have the intent to go one direction and then something happens and you make a right ankle turn. That's my life story. Right
okay,
ankle turns.
Yes, yes. We are totally scheduling a show on this one. Because
yeah.
I definitely need to know how you went from breaking your ankle to working at a hospital. It's just crazy.
It's strange. Oh, my God. It was funny because I don't care if we're a few minutes over. So, you know, when you're working loss prevention and you're chasing shoplifters, I was mainly catching employees stealing, but I would catch the occasional shoplifter, and it's so funny. You know, I wish I could have a fantastic story to tell about breaking my ankle. And it was a really bad break, too, because that has surgery and plates and stuff. But this guy, I was at Kohl's. I was working at Kohl's at the time. This guy stole a pair of shoes, and the office is at the opposite side of the store. So he's walking up towards the front, and I'm, like, running from my office with the cameras to catch up to him. And you know how Kohl's has two sets of sliding doors. So he gets through both sets, you know, just outside the store, and I'm running up to him. I go through the first set of doors, and the second set of doors is still open. Well, as I get to almost through the second set of doors, they start to close. And the door closes, and it clips me on the arm. And the doors are supposed to break away, but it didn't break away completely. So it put me at just some weird spin kind of thing. And I fall literally right behind this guy. And halfway into my fall, there's that loud snap. But
oh,
I don't
God.
Remember it. Yeah, I don't remember it hurting, but it was hilarious. Because when I fell behind the guy, he turns around and he goes, "Oh, my God, are you okay?" And blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, "Give me my shoes back," or something like that. And he runs off, you know, and it was just funny. So I'm laying in front of the store. I don't even try to move because I knew I broke something. I could hear it break. And
God.
And nobody's helping me. It was the oddest thing. It's people walking by me, not even saying anything. Like, I'm just sitting there. Laying on the ground.
Oh, man.
And, like, invisible. I'm, you know, 200 pounds, over 6 feet tall, just laying in the front of Kohl's, and nobody cares. So eventually I flagged somebody down, you know, and called an ambulance and all that, and it was pretty funny. But
oh, man.
That's
awful.
That's the teaser. That's the teaser for the show all about Jason.
We will have that coming up in April, I promise you.
It'll be awesome. And I could talk about aliens and my weird stuff. It's been a while since I've talked about it, so.
Yeah, your alien stuff is perfect. It's way out there.
Yeah.
It's totally believable. It's weird enough to make you think. Yeah, this will be perfect.
I got proof. I'm not just coming up with some strange story. I got physical, or at least I had physical proof. But
yeah, you had it, but anyway, that goes in with the whole story. So
yeah, this is gonna be. Yeah, we're gonna do the show, mm-hmm. and then. People are going to think I'm absolutely insane, but that's okay. I think people at work think I'm absolutely insane too. So
I could see that, but that's okay. We have to have the insane to break us away from the regular mundane stuff that's in the world.
No, it's entertaining. Well, with that, I am eyeballing a box of unicorn cereal with magic.
Oh my God!
I'm reading.
Okay,
reading
so you
the box
just you just said that. I swear to God, you just said that. My timeline on Facebook is coming up with nothing but freaking unicorns.
I got a
and
box.
This is your
Kellogg's
fault.
I know.
It's your fault.
It's, I'm the unicorn guy. And it's got magic cupcake crystals on it, so I'm gonna have to crack this bad boy open. And I do it hardcore too. I don't even put milk on it. I just take my big grubby plate-sized hands and just shovel it into my mouth and hopefully not catch the diabetes.
Oh no! I can't believe you just said that.
Diabetes.
Okay. All right. I guess we'll put this one to bed tonight. And yes, in April we will have an all about Jason.
Awesome. I can't wait. Alrighty. Well, I hope everybody has a fantastic week, and we'll see everybody next Sunday, 8 p.m. And unless you have anything else, Maria, I guess we'll close it out and hope everybody has a safe week. And please give us a like on Facebook at Paranormal Horizons on Facebook. And that page is banging.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. Lots of activity. You know, we've kind of shifted, and I believe we mentioned this on the previous show, we're just throwing out the memes. It's all about the memes.
That's all anybody wants to see.
Yeah, we're all like,
make them happy.
We're like, I know, it's true. I've noticed that. It's like, you know, you post some paranormal UFO story from China, you get Facebook decides it only wants to send it to 20 people, but you post a fat cat, you know, with some funny script.
We need more
next...
Cheetos.
Yeah. Karen, get me more Cheetos. And there's a fat cat there. Suddenly it's reaching 14,000 people with, you know, 300 engagements. So that's going to continue because why not?
Yeah. Fat cats and Cheetos are great.
And this week alone, our little tiny Facebook page has reached 70,000 people. So, are some of the posts.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy.
Incredible. It's wonderful. As long as we're making people laugh, it's great.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's, you know, people are so diverse out there. I'm sure some of the ones have been offended. But more people are joining our page than are leaving, that's for sure. So, getting out there. All right. Good night, everyone. We'll see everybody next week. And if you have a chance, maybe I should give a shout out to Kellogg for unicorn cereal. And it's cupcake.
Okay.
Yeah, so if Kellogg wants to pay me to sponsor their cereal.
There you go.
All right. I'm getting a little too feisty. I gotta go. So we'll see everybody next week. Good night, everyone.
Good night.